whole lot of talk. The interviews that rock. Brought to you by Rock Antenna, Germany's number one rock radio station.
Hi, Simon. How are you?
I'm very good. How are you doing?
All right. You know what? I'm really happy that I can do this interview with you, because the last couple of times I always talked to Don and to Roger.
Yes.
They never take those things seriously. I mean, if you ask them, like, what's the meaning of the record title? They go like, well, what does it mean to you? And I'm like, it doesn't matter what it means to me. You know, I want to know what it means to you. So it's like, oh. And then we talk about football. Great.
Football. Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, they loved football. I'm not a fan of football, so you're right.
But I need to ask you, though, you know, who's going to be world champion?
I don't know. Who? See, this is too much I know about football. Not a lot. My dad supports Liverpool. That's all I know.
Well, then the obviously next question, first question, official question is like, you know, what does the record title Splat mean?
Well, yeah, I've been asked this question a lot over the last few weeks. You know, I can give you the kind of more the short basic answer. You know, Ian Gillan can give you the more in-depth answer, you know, but, you know, Splat is like kind of like if you imagine a fly hitting the windscreen of a window and it's splat, and that's the end of that fly's reality. But is it, or what comes next for that, you know, that fly or person, you know? So it's a little bit like that. It's a kind of more of a, you know, when we all go, what's next? Because, you know, as Gillan says, you know, when he was growing up, there was like, I don't know, 2 billion people on the planet, and there's like 9 billion now or something. So something's going to have to give at some point, you know. And so it's the end of one reality, and what's the next reality? That's kind of like his meaning for it, you know. So, and that's all you're going to get out of me about that.
But it's funny because, you know, you have the assumption that over the last couple of records that Deep Purple did, you had Whoosh, you had Equals One, you have Splat. You feel like they don't care anymore. Whatever the record title is, just give it a name, you know.
Well, you know, the thing is, it's the titles and the words, that's all Ian Gillan's brain. You know, he's a very, very intelligent, very, very different kind of mindset when he comes up with words and stuff. He's a great storyteller. Like some of these songs on this record, I think he had 15 minutes worth of lyrics for one song, you know? And so he has to, and he talks about alternate realities and all this stuff. But, you know, the thing is, if you look at it this way, that's his job. He's a wordsmith. I'm a guitarist. Yeah. I can come up with millions of technical stuff and all alternate lines and all this sort of stuff. And that's his job, is to come up with these words. If they asked me to write the lyrics, it would be crap, you know.
So how much actually, I mean, it's not your first record with Deep Purple, obviously, but, you know, it's your second one. It's you're in the band. We imagine you're in the band more and more, including everything feels more natural probably after the first one. How much could you contribute to Splat? And how do you guys still write music? You get in one room, you jam in, and then the songs come.
Well, the thing is, when you're in a band like Purple, there's no one person writes the songs. It's five of us in a room. Let's go. That's it. It's as simple as that. It's as old school as it gets. It's not like modern, you know, some of these modern bands where they have a songwriter come in or whatever. No, we are five musicians in a room, plug in, and whatever comes out, comes out. That's it. And that's this album. That's how it comes out, you know. I have preconceived ideas, you know, in my head. And so does Don, so does Roger. But we don't bring them to the room because we want to see what happens in that room first, you know. Because there's a magic that happens when you put five people in a room and they're comfortable with each other. As you said, I've been in the band, whatever, you know, 4 or 5 years now. And, you know, the first record was great. But it was a little bit more segregated and a little bit, you know, the way we were, you know, because that was just a natural thing. We didn't really know each other that well. Whereas this record, we knew each other very well. We played together for so long now. And so this one was very easy, very, you know, from the start until the finish, everything was just so easy, which was, I think that's why, in my opinion, it turned out so well, you know, because it was a band working as a band, basically.
How much did it take you? How long did it take you actually to write and record the whole thing?
Well, generally what we do is we do three writing sessions at the start.
Yeah.
This album, most of the album was done in the first writing session. So the second and third session, we went to the pub. that's it. And, but, you know, so it's hard to tell because there's always gaps. We recorded it in Nashville we were there for about 5 weeks.
Yeah.
So I'd say from writing till the end of us recording it, you're probably talking maybe 8 weeks it takes to do it, you know, because, and a lot of that was writing and rehearsing. That was it really, you know. So, you know, we generally had about 2.5 weeks actually recording in the studio in Nashville. And then once that's done, you know, Bob Ezrin, he takes it and he goes and mixes it. And so that's another, I don't know, weeks or that. Then it has to be mastered. So the mastering guy gets it for a week and then he has to do all this stuff. So it's a big process when you come to make a record.
Bob Ezrin has been working with you with the last couple of records, I guess. But how's it working with Bob Ezrin? Because he feels like such an, you know, I've never met him, but he feels like he's such an icon. And yeah. you would like believe every word he's saying. Maybe if you don't even you know agree to it. But still, how was that for you?
You know, working with Bob has been amazing. You know, he's a great, you know, as you said, he's an icon. He's a legend. You look at what he's done, it's like, you say to yourself, how do I argue with anything that he says? You know, but the thing is with Bob, he's very open and he wants input. He doesn't want him to dictate everything because he respects us as musicians. He respects my opinion, Pacey's, Gillan's, whatever. So he wants, you know, the input. He's like the sixth member of the band, if you want to call it. And but the thing is, for a producer, you know, Bob is like the general and we're just the soldiers. So he has to control us all the time, you know, and he's very, very good at it. You know, he's very good at you know, making things easy, making us, or getting the best out of us, you know.
Yeah.
But when we feel relaxed, you know, in the studio, we can just concentrate on what we do best, which is just play. And Bob's great at that, you know, and he'll just go, you know, we'll do 3 or 4 takes of each song. We play everything live, the five of us in one room, and he records it. And he gets 3 or 4 takes, and he goes, I've got it, next, you know. It was like, well, can we do it again? Because we would sit and do one song all day. But Bob's like, that's what you need. And Bob's great at that. You need a general. You need somebody to go, no, we're done, move on. This is the next song, you know. So, as I said, because, you know, I would probably sit there all day. Well, try that song again. And you just ruin it. You know, whereas Bob is looking in from the outside. So he hears what we're playing. We're playing in the room, but we're so focused on our parts and trying to get them right. He's listening to the overall sound and the overall take, which likes of you or anybody else is going to listen to. So he goes, no, that's the one. Whereas sometimes musicians themselves can overwork it and you lose the take, that one magical take. But yeah, no, he's great. He's a lovely guy. You know, I get on well with Bob, which is brilliant.
It's amazing and astonishing at the same time that you guys seem to be still one of the hardest working bands ever. I mean, you have the feeling when you look at it from the outside that if you're not in the studio, you're on the stage. But if you're not on the stage, you're in the studio. Is there ever going to be, you guys don't take any breaks anymore, do you?
Sometimes we take breaks, you know. Well, last year was, I'd say, a break from touring. We did some shows last year, not a lot, but the record last year. So yeah, last year was kind of like a little break, you know. This year is just chaos because it's about 95 shows or something. This year. I don't know. I can't remember. Next year, you know, there's talk of another record next year and then some more shows next year. So the thing is, you know, everybody in life needs a purpose, I believe, you know, and you need it to keep going. You have to have a purpose, you know, and I think with the guys, they're obviously a little bit older than me. And I think it's really good for them just to keep playing music, and because they still can, you know, it would be a different story if they couldn't play, you know, or anything, or couldn't sing or whatnot. But they're amazing at their instruments. And Gillan's, you know, he's adapted, obviously, you know, over the years for his vocals, because, you know, you can't ask an 80-year-old man you know, to sing what he sang when he was 20. You know, it's like asking an 80-year-old man, an Olympic athlete, to do what he did when he was 20. It's just impossible, you know. So, but he's really done a great job. And, you know, he's a genius. So he is, that man. He really is. He's just a genius. But, you know, we've no intention of stopping, which is the good thing.
I've heard it from so many old bands that I talk to. It's just great. You have to like put them in prison to keep them away from a stage.
Yeah.
which is great though.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, music is like a drug. It's addictive. Once you start, it's like you cannot stop. You know, it's one of those things. Like I don't ever see myself stopping. You know, like there's the thought of it is like, that doesn't compute in my brain.
Let's talk about some songs that you recorded now. The first single was Arrogant Boy.
Yes.
Who's meant? Who's the arrogant boy, actually?
The arrogant boy? It's probably me. But I don't know. The arrogant boy. You know, it's, you know, that song was, to be honest, when we started that song, I never in a million years thought it would be the first single, you know. I thought it was just some, you know, a bit of self-indulgence from Don Airey and myself, you know. This is great. This is a great song. And it's really, you know, but we never thought it would be the first single. It was only really till Ian put his vocals over it. And I immediately, as soon as the first time I heard it with the vocals, I was like, that's the first single. Gotta be. So it's a crazy thing with songs. You just don't know. It's, you know, when you put vocals and melodies and lyrics over, it just ties it all together and makes it a song, you know. And what we do instrumentally is, you know, it's great. But once you put it all together as a package, it's like, that's when the magic happens. But yeah, you know, it's a great song. I'm very happy with it. I'm proud of it. It's my favorite song on the record. But that and then the next one and then the next one and then the next one.
what was the hardest song? What was the song it took you guys longest to finish?
The longest one to finish was... There was one. I can't even remember the name of it. But I remember... It's probably the longest song on the record, whatever that one is. But it was... I remember playing, and it was Bob's idea, and you know we were playing it for him, and he went, "It needs something in the middle, a whole new weird section." So that's always the hardest thing to do. So Don and me, you know, we sat for a day or an afternoon. We said, "Well, let's see what we can do and add to this." And we did. We sat and we got this whole new section. And to be honest, it wasn't really hard to do. As I say, with this record, nothing was really hard with it. It was all easy. But that was probably, if you're asking me what was the hardest and the longest one to do, it was probably that song. But yeah, it's, it was easy. But we just, you know, it was a case of like, let's write another 2 minutes musical journey on with Dawn and me and everyone, you know. So yeah, but that was Bob's idea. He said, we need something. So we did it, you know. But in fairness, we did that with the Equals One record too, with the track Bleeding Obvious. We'd had a whole middle section. Don and me sat for a day and created absolute madness.
it's you know, looking back now, those 4 or 5 years that you've been in the band, it never seemed, you know, even when you look at it from the outside, it never seemed that there is a... that there was actually any question about you and your persona and your guitar playing. And how does it feel for you to be in the band now after everything got, you know, more familiar? Did those guys, there must have been any sort of pressure to step into, you know, to fill up their shoes. Everybody came before you, you know.
Well, yeah, you know, there's always pressure, you know, no matter what situation it is, you know, if you're starting something new, there's a little bit of pressure. For me, starting the band was, well, joining the band, it was different because I initially was only standing in for Steve.
Yeah.
So it wasn't my gig. And so I was, and me being, you know, I've been a session musician for a long time and various things. So I had this mental attitude of like, okay, this is going to be great. I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to go in, learn songs, do the shows, and come home. And that's it. I'm done. You know, I never thought I would be a part of this. But after that, then they asked me to join and whatnot, just due to, you know, Steve's unfortunate circumstances and what. But I never really feel that much of a pressure. People always ask me that question, you know, because of Richie and Steve and Tommy and Joe Satriani, all these guitar greats that's been in this band. I think it's a little, I think I just got a lot of confidence in myself. You know, I just, you have to be successful in the music industry. And, you know, I've learned this a lot from, you know, Don Airey and working with lots of other great musicians. Just it's having that inner confidence so you don't feel the pressure. You know, I just went in, there was always this question of, do I sound like Richie or do I sound like Steve or do I play like this, play like that, you know? But I was just like, Don Airey told me, he says, we don't want that.
Okay.
Stuff all that crap. Just be yourself. Just play the way you play. That is why you are here. You're not here to sound like Steve. You know, they don't want another Richie Blackmore. They don't want Steve. They want you. It's different. It's fresh, you know. They had Steve. I can't play like Steve, you know, and I can't play like Richie. I can't play like Joe, you know. So I just play like me, unfortunately. And it is what it is, you know. So I think once you overcome that and you go, I'm just going to be me and play the way I play, that's where you, where it's got to now is where I just feel comfortable and I don't think about what's been before me. I just look forward and I go, this is what I'm going to do. And I don't care what anybody thinks, you know, because you have to. If I cared what anybody thinks, especially today,
yeah,
with internet, you know, everybody's comments and has an opinion on things, you know, most of it's great and some of it's bad, but I just don't care. I just like, you know what? I just do the best I can and I just hope that people love it and that's it, you know?
I totally understand this, but, you know, it's funny because as a band, I mean, the last couple of records, including Splat, they have such a high quality level. It's just, you know, it's like one level, it's up there. But I think it's incredibly hard. Maybe it's impossible to reach a level where you beat the nostalgia of, you know, Made in Japan, In Rock, Fireball, whatever you have back in the day.
Yep.
Do you as a band sometimes look back at this and go like, how can we reach this level? Or do you go like, nah, it's not reachable, whatever?
Well, you know, you always have to look at it in a way of, okay, where are we right now in the world? Okay. We are in a good, like everything is so different now than it was when those albums were released.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So you have to say, you have to always have to ask this question. If Smoke and the Water was released today, would it be as big a hit as it was then? And the answer is no, it wouldn't. Because we live in a different world. You know, a lot of people don't listen to music the way they did years ago. You know, music is not a domineering thing in their life. It's something, it just blends into the mix of everything else that everybody has going on. Whereas in the 70s and the 80s, that's all people had was music. We didn't have internet. We didn't have mobile phones and all this mad technology. So back then, you can't compete with history. You know, you just can't. It is what it is. It was done back then. So we don't think about it. We just want to enjoy playing music and creating new music. So, because as you said, you can't compete with what was done 30 years ago. It's impossible. Yeah. Right. You know, but it's, you know, because somebody asked this question to Roger and he actually said the same thing about Smoke and Water. He says it wouldn't be a hit today.
Yeah.
Right. You know, and you know, I don't know. Maybe it could be. You know, it's hard to know. But you know, you think of modern songs, which are number one hits in the charts these days, especially the big mainstream charts. It's all very simple pop throwaway music, which, you know, people wishy-washy, you know, I call it. But it's, whereas music back then was a bit more complicated. There was more harmony, you know,
you know, even if you look at a lot of the stuff in the 80s, like, you know, Steve Lukather is like a good friend of mine, but he's played with everyone. And he, I remember him doing an interview and saying, if you look at most pop music these days, it's two chords. In his day, it was a whole sheet music thing. You know, it was lots of chords, lots of harmony, you know, different melodies going on. Whereas now it's like, they don't need people like him, like Steve, to play that stuff. Because it's all very mainstream and very, I don't know, not very exciting. So it's, anyway, I'm getting off subject, but it's basically, you know, we just look forward and, you know, because they're, you know, especially the guys, they're at the stage, they don't care. They're just like, you know what? We just want to play music and have fun and create new stuff. And that's what it's all about.
But what are you going to do once Ian turns 120 and Pacey 115? Are you going to go and join AC/DC that is next? Or what are you going to do?
Well, I'll be by that stage, I'll be about their age then.
They are nice. So,
yeah. You know what? It's they are in the later years of their life, you know. But you know what? So we, you know, from them, they'll just keep going.
Yeah.
Until something happens. Who knows? I don't want anything to happen, but, you know, we all have to live in the real world a little bit, you know, nothing goes on forever. And, but, you know, they're having fun and just enjoying life and touring and they can still do it at that age, you know. Yeah. I hope when I'm 80, I can still do that, you know, so, but, you know, we'll see.
I already cannot even play tennis anymore. Anyway, but there's...
I can't play tennis anyway.
There's one title question. You got to answer me because it's the title that you know, springs into your eyes the most. It's Jessica's Bra. Dear Lord, how can you come up with a song title like that?
Well, initially it was Jessica's Bar.
Okay.
But I think Gillan, it was spelt wrong, and Gillan went, that's much better. So when we left it at that, and after this Jessica's Bra, you know, because the whole song is about, you know, a guy being in a bar in the corner and blah, 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 you know, but it's, so the that's the thing with Jessica's Bra. But when you listen to the lyrics now, you actually start imagining you're in Jessica's Bra rather than a bar, you know, but that's how that came about. It was just a spelling mistake, you know.
That's great.
You know, why not? It's a bit more, it's more of a talkative point than Jessica's Bar.
That's true. That's true. Actually, it's true. Yeah. You know, you said before, those guys want you to be who you are and play what you can play. But then again, when you come into a band like this, do you feel the urge to motivate those guys for something new or to go on or to do, you know, not just to blend in, but to set an impact?
Well, I think just any sort of new person or fresh blood in the band will always give somebody a kick in the arse, you know. It's true. It does, you know, with us, with me especially, I have the attitude of, I want everybody to feel relaxed and I want everybody to have fun doing this. And to be honest, when I first joined, I could tell, you know, they've been doing this for 25, 30 years, with Steve, and it was brilliant and he was great. But you could tell he'd been doing it for 25, 30 years. It was kind of like, you know, but when I come in, it went from, you know, heads down, you know, playing away to heads up, if you know what I mean. So you could say, oh, this is different. We're going to play a little bit. So I didn't try to do anything. I just turned up and played. That's it. You know, I just played what I did. But you could see to them, it was different for them.
Yeah.
Because they didn't know how I play, you know, and I don't know how they played. So it was kind of like, oh, we'll have to learn. We'll have to try something different here, you know. And I think, you know, when you're with in a band for like so long as Steve was, you know, you get so used to that player. You know, in 30 years' time, if they're still alive in 30 years' time, I'll, when they're 110, you know, it could go the same way, you know, with me. You know, they get so used to me playing and vice versa. So anybody coming in that's new and fresh and it's just always going to, as I said, give everybody a kick in the arse. You know, okay, right, need to play again, right? Here we go, you know, let's try something different, you know. So, but it wasn't intentional for my part. I just showed up and did what I do, you know, a little kid from Belfast, that's it really, so...
I have no more further questions, actually, anymore. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Looking forward to your next gig here.
Yes, yeah, so am I.
Whole lot of talk, the interviews that rock. Subscribe to our channel for more rocking podcasts.